Okay. I see that we are recording, so I'd like to welcome everyone out to the City Council meeting this evening. The item on the agenda is citizen comment. I don't know, I'm looking through, I don't know if we have anyone that would like to make a comment. I don't see anyone that's not staff or on the council. And so there being no citizen comment, we'll go ahead and move forward with the approval of the City Council minutes. Have those been looked at and approved or reviewed? Is there a motion to approve those?
I reviewed them and didn't find any issue with mine. Anybody else have an issue? Or if not, I'll make a motion.
I didn't.
I move we approve the City Council meeting minutes from September 15th, 2020.
I have a motion. Is there a second? Okay, so motion by Ryan Mumford, seconded by Natalie Gordon, I believe. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 I'll second.
Okay, so I hear at least four. I don't think I heard you, Lisa.
Aye.
Okay, aye. So that's unanimous then. The next item on the agenda is the action items. Is there anything on the action items anyone would like to discuss? Okay, if not, then we'll move forward to the council reports. Let's start with you, Brian.
I was out of town over the weekend, so I missed the fall cleanup, but I did get a little bit of a pushback that maybe conference weekend wasn't the best time to have that. So I would propose that going forward, we maybe pick a different weekend. That's all I...
Yeah, that probably makes sense. So I was able to get mine taken care of the day before, so but that makes sense.
Yeah, we'll definitely make a note of that.
Okay. Let's see, Lisa?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I will move this out of your way so you don't have to see that. Okay, I'm going to show myself now. Here we go. Voila, I'm back. Okay. I did the fall cleanup. I did it on conference weekend on Saturday. And I want everybody to know how great those guys are. They were so awesome, and I had the missionaries help me do it, and I just want to say this is sort of funny. After the missionaries, I said, aren't those guys just great, you know, and they've all got their beards, and they're looking like they could kill you in an alley if you weren't nice to them, and one missionary said, are they all members? Of course, I couldn't answer that, but I thought that was sort of cute. The other thing is, we've got a lot to discuss, I think, with regard to COVID, but I don't think it's on the agenda today. Some things I think are sort of pressing. And other than that, I don't have anything to report.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Natalie.
Be frozen there.
Natalie? She's frozen. I can't tell. I'm just on my iPad tonight, so it's not working as quite as well.
Looks like she's stuck for a minute.
Okay. While she tries to reboot, let's go ahead and go to Ryan.
Excellent. So coming up for Parks and Arts, we had our last meeting, and we've got two events coming up right away. So our first event is the North Salt Lake Reads event and photo contest and essay winner. announcement. So that is tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at City Hall. If you wish to attend in person, if you wish to attend virtually, it'll be broadcast on Facebook Live for all to watch and see. We had some great essay submissions and some great photos submitted. The only thing, which is the same case every year, I just wish we had more of them, but I got to read through the essay submissions, and we have some really creative people in the city, and I think the essay topic, while it sounds very simple this year, actually was really hard, I think, for people to sit down and really write about. It was to write about their individual unique story, and that sounds intimidating to write about yourself, and yet we had just some amazing entries come in. So I'm excited to see. I haven't heard who the winners are yet, but I'm excited to hear those announced tomorrow. And then the photo contest will be announced tomorrow as well, and then as well as our author speaker tomorrow. So that's the NSL Reads event tomorrow at 7 p.m. at City Hall and virtually on Facebook Live. The other event is Saturday, Halloween, so October 31st. So this is our Halloween fun run, which is what traditionally it is. And so this year we're opting to not do the run as the key component and to just do a Halloween kind of costume party event. As we discussed, we haven't quite figured out a way to do a run safely and effectively and socially distant without timings and heats and all sorts of issues. And this is a very casual, fun event. And so instead they're opting for more of a costume party contest and a dance, kind of like they're going to have a DJ playing Halloween music and then activities for people to do in their socially distant group. So as you come with your family that you're already with, you can set up in different places along the field at Hatch Park. And so that's what they're thinking. They're thinking 9 to 11 in the morning on Halloween morning. So that's Saturday, October 31st. So all the details haven't been finalized yet with that and how that will work. We just couldn't figure out a safe way to do the run or to do some of the traditional items of this event, but they really wanted to hold the event and not lose out on what people are looking forward to and a chance to dress up and to cater to those citizens. And so that's why we're opting to change it to be a socially distant in the field outdoor kind of event. So those are the events coming up from Parks and Arts.
Dan? Oh, Ryan, on that, Ryan, can you just give me a call maybe after this? I just need to find out what you guys are expecting from me tomorrow.
Yes, that would be great. I'll call you after. We're done.
Okay.
So we had our Jordan River Governing Board meeting here last week. We didn't have a lot of business there either, although we had a presentation by a gal that's trying to save the monarch butterflies. I guess they're in danger. I didn't realize some of the things she talked about there. I guess they only eat one plant, that's the milkweed. And if there's no milkweeds, they all die off. And so she gave quite a good, interesting presentation, and she's encouraging us as individuals and cities to try to find little patches of milkweed that we can encourage along with some seeds and encourage the monarch butterflies so they don't die off. And then they did get back the results from the surveys that were taking place for the last couple of months. And they went through those surveys. Quite interesting. Maybe I'll just send that out to everybody and kind of review the graphics yourself and see that there was quite a bit of interest in the Jordan River Parkway. And of course, the big issue is that people like to see the water cleaner, which means that we all have to do a little better job at keeping the streets clean and not letting stuff go down the storm drain that ends up in the river and try to filter things before it goes in the river. So that was probably the biggest surprise. The rest of it, I think, was pretty much what you expected. People like the trails. They like the parkway. They use it quite a bit. And so it was an interesting survey, but I'll just send that out to everybody. I think that's about it for me.
Thanks. Stan, Natalie, can you talk to us yet? Natalie, are you there?
I'm so sorry I got kicked off, but now I told everyone in my family to get off the Wi-Fi. Yeah, so I just wanted to say the Youth Council met at the Legacy Park today and picked up trash along the trail, which was awesome. And they're planning on meeting the first and third weeks of Tuesdays of the month at 5. So it's going really well. We have a lot of kids that are participating. And then I also have some concerns about local businesses not having their employees wear masks. And I wondered if we could talk about that at our next meeting, maybe put it on the agenda.
Okay. That sounds good. Thanks, Natalie. We just see, I think, am I next or David? David, do you have, well, just, I'll just go through mine. So we met with, had a few meetings on the bridge on 1100 North, trying to get funding for that. So we met with Craig Peterson, who's our lobbyist. He set up a meeting with several people, including Todd and Melissa, the Senate representative, talking about it. I think they're on board. It's still a tough funding project. There may be a $30 million bond out there that we're hoping our legislative folks will be able to help us with. We did have the county has that third quarter cent that they've been assessing, and money for that was just recently allocated. We had applied for $1,350,000. Originally, they said that they would allocate $500,000 to us through a little bit of talking. And anyway, they've agreed to fund us to $1 million now on that project, and potentially more if we can spread it over 2 years. I don't know, we can see. That was just the steering committee that had met that, and those are the steering committee's recommendations. But anyway, that's where we are. We're a little bit short. Melissa Ballard did recommend, and I think it would, we'll have to try. If maybe we can all make an effort to reach out to any contacts we have in Woods Cross to see if we can get them to help with the funding as well. So we'll need to do some reach out there and see what we can do. They had a meeting, and I'm not sure how many of you were on the meeting on the annexation that they'd set up. That was an informative meeting, and there will be a lot of comment on that. And I think that'll be a lot bigger project than what I'd imagined. People said that they're willing to talk and discuss it. Anyway, when we get, it was an interesting meeting, trying to understand a little bit about where different people are concerned. I think there was some willingness to say, let's at least look at it and get the information, get better information so that a better decision can be made. But anyway, that was that meeting. I think that probably is it. Ken, you'll probably want to touch on some of those things too. South Davis Rec District, they're getting ready to, the pool has some major problems with it as far as air handling, and it's affected the roof with some rust and problems with the roof. That'll be a project that'll be several hundred thousand dollars. they're getting ready to let that project out. And the sewer district will talk a little bit about, they're getting closer to selling gas on that. But anyway, they're still having problems with subcontractors and getting gas sold to make that really a viable project. So anyway, with that, David, do you have anything?
Nothing, Mayor.
Okay, thanks. Ken, let me turn the time over to you, and then we'll either go, I guess, go into decide if we want to go into a closed session or not.
That's correct.
I thought Dal was going to come on, but I don't see him here. So
yeah, he's now on. So.
Oh, okay. Oh, there he is. I see him.
So thank you, Mayor. And I was going to touch briefly on the annexation meeting, just to let you know, in addition to what the mayor told you, we committed to putting a web page together on our website, which Sherry has done. And so we'll continue to update the public on their annexation questions on that website. And then we will have, out of that meeting, as the mayor alluded to, we'll have a list of questions that have not been forwarded to us, though we took notes. And so we're going to try to answer those questions and put those answers on the website too. That's the only thing I had, other than our discussion we want to have about the sewer district and the odors. The purpose, and it would be good for me to maybe take 1 minute here, Dal, before we let you talk. The purpose of having this on the agenda, and I sent some information to you under a closed session, if in case that you want to go into closed session, which we may not need to do at all. But we are getting some complaints, and I don't know if some of you are getting complaints. Maybe Ryan and Natalie, who live in the neighborhood, are getting complaints, but city staff and I'm getting complaints from residents who are frustrated, and naturally, and which is not a surprise to anybody. But we just thought, and part of the complaint is now that the city has issued a citation and the period of time for compliance has passed, what's the city going to do next? And so I thought it was a good opportunity to maybe report back to the council that we were getting those complaints. And then I think the main purpose would be for the city council to give us some direction, take some action, take a position that we can then relay to the public. And a reasonable position for us would be that the sewer district is continuing to work to remedy the smells and take corrective action, and we want to let the sewer district take the time they need to make those corrections to correct the problem. And that would be a reasonable approach. It's probably the approach that I think I'm the most comfortable with, rather than getting too adversarial with the district. And anyway, having said that, now I would say one last thing. Between July 20th and September, Ryan.
Can we just, excuse me, Ken, can we just have everybody mute their phones, their speakers other than Ken?
Good idea. So in a 60-day period between July 20th and September 20th, Ryan has been good enough to inform us of events, odor events in the neighborhood. And so we may have more, but we have events happening, as near as I can tell, and I kind of mapped this out, every 3 to 5 days or 2 to 3 times a week during that period of time, we had these events occurring in the neighborhood. And they mostly occur in the evening and at night. Some occurred during the day and some early in the morning, but mostly at night. So anyway, that gives you some idea of I think that those events have generated the complaints that we're getting, and there is an uptick in complaints. And so that's why we wanted to visit. And I appreciate always, Dal, we appreciate you being able to visit with us and report to the City Council on things that the district is doing and items that the board has authorized you to do recently. And maybe you could just give us some updates on progress and what's really happening with related to smell.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Thank you. Thanks, Ken. Earlier I had Linda sent out a summary that I shared with Mayor Arvey and Ryan and you. The Jacob study, we went through that literally line by line, and we have covered all of the things that they found or pointed out. And that list summarizes what the issues were and what we've done about them. With that study and with, quite frankly, with following up on complaints, I think we're coming down to a couple of final significant issues that we're working on. The morning complaints, I think, are when we load biosolids to haul them away, when they get stirred up, and with the wind direction in the morning, we get the very south end of Foxboro. In the evening, from 9 to 10:30, 11, sometimes 12 o'clock, I think, again, it's there's usually not any. The plants run 24/7. They don't really change generally that much, but that little light breeze going to the east, straight east from the plant, carries whatever odors there are to the south end of Foxboro. The south plant treatment operation seems to be going well right now. We have had a couple of upsets over the last few months, and we always have had over the years. It's just that really nobody was really sensitive to the odors, and it didn't really, people probably didn't realize whether it was us or the lake or whatever. So we'll always have those to deal with a bit. But the major area comes down to the storage pile where the biosolids are until we load them up. And then when we load them, it stirs them up and makes the odors worse. And then we've come to realize that as the trucks leave the area, driving down Center Street and a lot of, and then they go north on Legacy. That's a problem. And then the food waste trucks coming in, you know, a load of dairy waste can reek pretty strong. Had one lady call us, she was right on the overpass at Legacy. And for some reason the traffic was backed up and the truck was sitting there and they could smell it. So we've been kind of inventorying the trucks and their condition. And there's two things about one, if they're dirty, if there's stuff on the outside, it will smell. And then some of them are vented so that whatever's odors are stirred up inside come venting. So working off of the Jacobs report and doing research on what, you know, we could build, you know, throw up a geodesic dome over the whole plant site and scrub the air. A little difficult and obviously extremely expensive. As we researched, we found that the most common response to these final areas that we can't cover, we can't scrub them. The other things we've used that have been successful don't work on this outdoor stuff and on these trucks. We've become familiar with odor scrubbing technology that it can't, they can use mists, but even better are vapors. There are chemicals that we're not looking for a fragrance. We don't want to just mask the odor, because typically that odor then becomes in itself objectionable. We're looking to actually neutralize the odor. We have been working with three companies, Suez, Water Technologies, a gigantic French-owned company, a global odor control technology, and a company called Ecosorb. And they're all using essentially the same, not exactly the same chemical, but it's the same family. These chemicals in a mist or a spray or mixed with odors neutralize the odor. There are several mechanisms. Some of it's an actual oxidation reduction reaction, you know, similar to burning the odor, oxidizing the odor. Part of it is, I can't ever remember, it's a really strange new term. The molecule of the deodorant interlocks with the molecule of the odor, and it's kind of like Bose noise canceling headphones. They cancel each other out. Adsorption is another mechanism that's involved. They do a pretty permanent job of locking down that odor. So to take care of these outside odors, essentially what you do is you run a delivery system around the area you're trying to protect that can deliver enough. If you do a mist, the mist tends to fall to the ground because it's a particle that's heavier than air, and you have less chance to contact the odors. And compared to a vapor has much, much more surface area. There's more of the product to contact the odor, and that's really what you're trying to do. And so you put a network around the site. You have generators that generate the vapor and run that anytime that there's an issue with odors. We may need to run that 24/7, or we may need to only run it during certain times of the day. Right now, I'd say that if we ran it between 6 and 9 in the morning and 8 and midnight, depending on how effective it is, we'd have very few odor complaints. We're working with three really good vendors. GOC, their senior field guy was here all day yesterday and today. I'd hope to actually have a fairly concrete proposal from him by this evening, but he didn't quite make it. He'll have that for me though before he leaves town tomorrow. The board has authorized us to proceed with that project. We were at a funding level of $50,000 to $75,000. As we've looked at it and had more of these guys actually visit the site, we've expanded. We started out looking at maybe just surrounding the biosolid storage area, but at this point we're suggesting that we do the entire east fence and the entire north fence, and possibly even come back down the west or the south fence because of the school. And so that's the fundamental thing that we're looking to do. It protects the whole area, and it doesn't matter where the odor is coming from within the site. It has to get past that vapor barrier. Now, in addition to that, we've come up with some good ideas or run across some good ideas. The odorous trucks, GOC says that in a lot of the landfills that they work with, they put in a kind of an archway with spray bars that as the trucks come in or out, I don't know which, they actually spray a light mist of this material and cover the truck. And it, again, it scrubs the odors on the truck. This company has 5 clients that we know of in Salt Lake, Snyderville Basin up in Park City, the biggest new treatment plant in the state, Jordan Basin down by the prison, Salt Lake County South Valley Water Reclamation Facility, a large plant on 72nd South, Central Davis just north of us. Most of these groups haul their biosolids to ET technology for landfilling. ET requires that they mix their biosolids with this product to lock up the odors so that when it gets to them and as they handle it in the landfill, it's not a problem. So one of the things we're looking at with GOC is to mix their product with the biosolids right as it initially where it first meets the atmosphere. It comes out of a tank, goes through this dewatering press, and we would mix it right there before it even came out of that building, which would give us a kind of a belt and suspenders. That's our most significant source right there, those biosolids. Theoretically, if we treat them right there, that's really all we need to do. But we've got enough miscellaneous little fugitive orders, and we've got the South plant kicking up some odors once in a while. I would like to do both. One more pass at this and really, really solve the problem. We'll also, for worker comfort, I guess, the big receiving building where the raw food waste comes in, the scrubber there works really well. I don't think we've ever had an odor complaint from those food waste odors, and but inside there is pretty nasty. They can use the vapor system here. These vapors are literally food grade. They're not toxic in any way. And so we could actually mist the inside of that building on a semi-continuous basis and provide a better working environment in there. See if there's anything I've missed. The board also authorized us to proceed with a dispersion study, which means we would create a computer model. You'd look at the meteorological data. You'd look at the odor study, what specific odors were present in different parts of the plant, and then create a mathematical model of how theoretically do those odors spread across the area. The proposal there was like $92,000 to do that study. As we've worked with the scrubber guys, OC or GOC particularly, they have provided that service in the past. They've come to feel that it just really is not worth much, and so they've quit doing it, and none of them felt that it was really worth the money to do the dispersion study. We know the odors at the plant site. We know they end up in Foxborough, although I did have a new class of complaint. The folks at the Hinckley Farm said that some of their patrons have complained about odors. Wind doesn't blow southwest very often, but I guess that has happened. So we're looking into that aspect of things. But I'd lot rather, so at the end of the day, if we were a huge refinery with multiple areas where we had receptors, subdivisions to the west, subdivisions to the south, a dispersion study might help fine tune and make solutions more economical. but we're a small site. We got a very specific receptor area. We're going to cover the whole area of the plant and protect that whole side of the plant. So I don't know what a dispersion study would tell us. And a lot rather spend that money on equipment to get the job done. So I've got to, we're just kind of getting those thoughts put together. So I need to get back with the board to maybe shift those funds and with more emphasis on getting this infrastructure built as quickly as possible. We can get this in place in a few weeks once we've got a go ahead. Right now, far and away, my preferred alternative is the GOC Tech. They manufacture all of their own equipment. The fellow that's here is actually also in charge of the shop that fabricates the equipment. He said that the vaporizer is a core piece that would be hard to fabricate ourselves, but everything else, the blowers, the metering pumps, is much like lots of other stuff we have on site. To not to save money, but to save time, he's willing to work with us and let us literally fabricate it here on site with his assistance. I showed him around, met our people, showed him our shop, showed him other projects we'd done, and he said, "Yeah," I said, "your guys can whip this out very expeditiously."
So, do you mind if I ask you a question here? So, you're talking about moving ahead with this idea that the northeast and south sides of the plant would have this vapor kind of, you called it a vapor, maybe a vapor barrier technology. That would be what you're moving ahead with first?
Right.
Okay. And that will take a few weeks, you said?
Well, yeah, a month, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Probably the biggest lean time items is a blower. Today, you always have to hedge a little bit because supply lines are pretty fragile. But we have acquired a couple of blowers lately. With any luck at all, though, 3 or 4 weeks to actually get the blower. So that's our biggest lead time item. Everything else we can get procured here locally without much trouble.
Great. Mayor, we turn it over to the mayor and council to ask questions from here. I think, Dal, were you finished with your...
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
So are there any questions for Dal?
I had a question.
Do you anticipate any big changes coming into the winter? I think it's been about a year and a half that we're going through this, and it seemed like there was some swing in smell in winter and early spring with those biosolid solar drying beds. Do you anticipate any sort of big changes as we come into fall and winter with the plant?
Ryan, no, I don't. So our earliest odor problems last fall were in October, and So right now, and we felt like at the time, and probably that was just because of historical experience, that the odors were mainly coming out of the drying beds, and the drying beds with this new digestate in them from the food waste project really did reek. And so we worked to get those dewatered and transported away. And so the drying beds now are essentially empty. Where we store biosolids as we dewater. So right now, we have a mechanical dewatering for the south plant. It's about a 10-wheel dump truck load a day. and it gets hauled every day except over the weekend. And the biosolids out of the food waste project are about, if you know what a 10-wheeler and a pup looks like, it's about two of those a day. And again, we get those out of there at most every 48 hours, but they do stink when we stir them up. But that's all. So we don't have the big drying beds full. Now, last fall, if we knew then what we do now, we would have realized that it wasn't just the drying beds, that we had all these other issues, but we didn't know what we didn't know, and we've learned a lot since then, and we could address things quicker if we didn't know they were a problem. But I think we should not have any new upsurge in problems because of cold weather.
Thank you. My other question is about the kill events that's killing the bacteria at the plant. I guess we've had two or three events that our bacteria has died just here recently. And I may be misinformed. I thought it sounded like something was put into the sewer system that kills our bacteria. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
So we've at the South plant, we probably have 10,000 connections to the system. We have North Salt Lake Industrial Park has maybe 350 different businesses. And in addition to that, we have the refinery. We have Chevron USA is also connected to the system. So at both plants, periodically, we will get something. Could be a lawn chemical guy washing out his tank in a car wash. You know, a half a gallon of diazinon weed killer would really knock us for a loop. So we periodically at each plant get just little toxic events that kind of knock the biology for a loop. That's just kind of the nature of the business. If it's persistent, you know, we actually do biological monitoring tests on our effluent that we have to pass to show that our effluent's not toxic. And so a number of times over the years, the first one we ran into, our biomonitoring test where the lab cultures little fathead minnow neonates, which are just a speck of light floating around in a little cup. If that's how tiny they are, they're not quite microscopic, but darn near. And we were losing those, and the biomonitoring test, if you fail, then it triggers an investigation to figure out what the toxicity is, and they manipulate the test to try to figure out what's toxic, because there are 50, 60, maybe by today, 80,000 chemicals in use every day in the United States, and you can't test for all of them. So they'll take a sample and they'll aerate it for 2 hours. They'll test it, it's toxic, they'll aerate it, they'll test it again, toxicity's gone. So you would assume, well, it's something volatile. Maybe it's a volatile organic substance. They'll run it through a resin column that takes out heavy metals. Test it, it's toxic, you run it through the column, take out the heavy metals, test it again, it's okay. They say, okay, we're looking for heavy metals. We went through that process, figured out that we were looking for a surfactant, and turned out to be Fox Valley Tanning and Intermountain Healthcare Laundry. They were discharging about 100 pounds a day of a really powerful industrial surfactant called nonyl phenol ethoxylate. And a half a part per million in our effluent was toxic to these fathead minnows. It was a little funny when the lab first started working, the first time they did the manipulations, there was no toxicity. So they redid the test and there was no toxicity. You know, and they're doing hundreds of these little cups that, you know, you got little solo cups and they'll put 10 of the little fathead minnows in there and they'll have 100% effluent, 50% effluent, 25% effluent. They'll have five dilutions, which will give them a feel for how toxic it is. And they did that, split that up, and they all, no toxicity. And they did it two or three times, and the lab's going, but then we went back to the regular test, which is what you do, and we failed again. And they went back, and they did the manipulations, and we passed again. Well, it turns out that in the standard test, the cup is, 500 milliliters, and in the where they do lots of them, they go down to like 200 milliliters. And when they did that, there was not enough of the chemical in there to kill the fish. So the molecule attaches itself to the fish's, to the oxygen exchange side on the gills. And in the big cup, there was enough molecules that it would fill all the gill spaces and they would die. But in the little cup, they would scavenge up all of the surfactant, but it wasn't enough to kill them. They'd get kind of tired looking. But so, I mean, that took a couple of 3 months just to figure that out. Anyway, we track, it's something we have to do all the time. And unfortunately, sometimes when it does that, it makes that trickling filter tower sick and it stinks for a while. The forced aeration, I think we're really getting there with that. We're adding an odor scrubber. And so we have had one, we are behind on one task, and that is the odor scrubber for the trickling filter tower. When we started to fill it, either we had a toxic episode and the towers got sick, or we were cutting off too much air. So we dug everything out and uncovered the underdrain system to get more airflow in case low airflow was our problem. And we've not got that totally figured out yet. So a week or so ago, we had a few days where the tower was really stinky and we weren't scrubbing it because we've still got to fix that system.
Are there any other questions for Dell?
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah, Lisa.
Yeah. Now, I read through the Jacobs study, like you did, but I'm not a scientist. But Dell, the thing that the takeaway from this is what I got. That it's hydrogen sulfide that's being emitted. That's the nasty odor, in large part. Secondly, they found in the study that it's coming at the loading of the biosolids and at the gas conditioning skid. Those are the two main areas. And you say you've handled that. The data seems to indicate that you handle it with the chemistry and basically carbon, right? Like a carbon filter. And I think I heard you say we've put a carbon filter in there and we've handled that. Is that correct?
Okay. So the first item there, that it's the loading area.
Yeah.
That's the big one right now. And
right.
That's the one we're working on. And we agree with them that that's right now the major odor source.
Right.
Our major odor. So we actually do not have a significant hydrogen sulfide odor problem. Quite a few of the areas generate some hydrogen sulfide, and hydrogen sulfide, you can detect it at really, really low levels. I mean, like 0.43 parts per billion, you can actually smell it.
But the study said that it's oftentimes six times that.
Right, at our fence line. But so hydrogen sulfide is rotten egg gas.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never had a single person describe to me that the odor they're smelling is like rotten egg gas, like the Yellowstone sulfur pots or high school lab hydrogen sulfide. The amount at our fence line is so low that dilution, it's, you know, it's just not detectable by the time it gets to the Foxborough neighborhood.
I may have misread the report. I thought it was hydrogen sulfide. So what is the outer?
Well, the report was correct. The levels they measured at our fence line, you would, you know, like 6 parts per billion, you'd clearly smell it. But they did not take samples in the neighborhood. And if it's a concern, we can have them come back and do sampling in the neighborhood. But like I say, nobody has ever, you know, the rotten egg is, you know, it's a pretty distinctive odor. Jacobs did, well, public meeting is probably not a good place to complain. Our odors are, our serious odor problems are not sulfur based. So normally, all of your odor problems at a wastewater treatment plant are what they call having a senior moment. I can't remember what they call reduced sulfur compounds, which hydrogen sulfide is one of those compounds, and that's very common. But in our case, our serious odor problems are nitrogen-based compounds. Because of the nature of the biosolids that, from the food waste, and the way we treat them to get the nutrients out. Long story, don't want to bore you crazy with that. So the loading area, we're addressing that as the major source. Now I've lost track of the rest of your question.
Well, okay. So how are you addressing that, the loading area again? Remind me.
That's the vapor system, as the odors are a vapor, they're a molecule, and as they try to leave the site, they've got to pass through the vapor cloud that we're generating, and those molecules simply grab onto them and neutralize them.
And you have what's your sense that this is going to work? On, you know, how confident are you that this will work?
Well, quite. So these vendors were recommended to us by Jacobs. Their local customers are very happy with them. They've been working up at Snyderville for 5 years, at South Valley Water Rec for 7 years. Nationally, they're very well known, and as the industry literature, the textbooks that we've dug up support the concept. So I think it should be very successful.
All right, that's good to know. Let me ask you another question. I noticed, like I say, I'm just reading the charts, but the chart has graphs of temperature and humidity, and you see them come in waves, right? And it looks to me, when I look at the wave action, that there's a lag time when there's a fluctuation. Every time you see that fluctuate, then you have the odor that results. And I looked at it that it was, if you could keep a consistency of temperature around 70 degrees, that is your breaking point. And so when you say, well, it won't make any difference in the winter or the summer or whatever, do you have the temperature controls in there that maybe that could be a solution as well? And I don't mean to sound like I know what I'm, you know, I'm just reading the report and trying to think through it.
You know, I don't have that with me tonight. I'm not sure which graphs you're looking at. Is it the?
It's figure A2. They're the figures, figure A2, A3, A4. It shows that. It shows this lag time. You've got a temperature fluctuation, then a little bit of a lag time by maybe an hour or two, and then you have the spike of the odor. And it's shown on 4 or 5 graphs. over and over.
So I'm wondering. Don't know. You know, I don't know as anybody picked up on that. I'll have to look at it, maybe give you a call and we can figure it out. Might be onto something there.
Another question I've got, and I don't mean to offend anybody who sits on the board, but we've got 4 appointed mayors on the board. And then we've got 2 electeds. We've got Davies and Birmingham. My question is, if whether or not the mayor should be appointing, is it by statute they have to be on the board, or could the mayor delegate and appoint a science person in their position rather than the elected head of a city or political body?
The appointment is made by the city council. Mm-hmm. So a city's representative is appointed by the city council. The city council can, if they appoint the mayor or a member of the city council, they can just do that. But all they have to do to appoint someone other than the mayor of the city council, they have to advertise that they're considering filling that position that way. I think there's a 2-week notice.
Okay.
Could take applications and appoint anybody that they want.
Would you find that at all to be a benefit?
Well, it certainly wouldn't hurt. There's a lot of benefit to having the elected officials because they know their community and they know what's going on and generally have, good, just broad general knowledge of the world and how things work.
Could you enlarge the board so that you have more than just.
Cause we can, just like we've done with this odor, we can hire that kind of expertise, which is what we've done, but, certainly not a bad idea.
Yeah. What about the idea, we have, you're saying it's nitrogen. It's not so much sulfur. And I was misunderstanding that because I was thinking, couldn't we draw upon our petroleum people, our gas people that are adjacent? They're dealing with odors and seem to manage.
Well, we actually did bring in a team of 2 or 3 guys from Holly that operate some of the same equipment, and they were helpful. We had some useful input from them.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had them all there, but we did have. So the other, before I forget again, you mentioned the gas scrubbing skid is a major odor source, and so. There's a reactor, a biological reactor in that facility, and it has a small 4-inch vent. It's a sealed tank. It has an aeration going in. It has a vent coming out, and they took a sample of that vent, and it was very strong.
Yeah.
And so, so this is a major source. But it's also one that's very easy to deal with, because the whole thing is sealed except that 1 4-inch pipe. And so we immediately fabricated an activated carbon canister to scrub the odor, to scrub the gas coming off of that process.
Yeah.
And so that skid was really easy to fix. In fact, today, it wasn't a very big canister, so it's not gonna last very long. And so in the meantime, we saw some products in the literature, and quite frankly, we just copied them. We took some 50-gallon drums and built a little support system inside. So now we have 2 55-gallon drum canisters of activated carbon, so we can change them out every couple of months instead of every couple of weeks.
Those are the ones that cost like $500. I saw them in Palestine. They say they're in Palestine. They use them, right? So you're not paying. You're not paid $500 for every filter. You've just made your own.
Right.
Which is good. That's really innovative. That's great.
So we've got the gas scrubbing skid. There were two tanks on that facility that needed scrubbers.
Right.
And they've both been taken care of.
So Dale, I think you're such a great guy and you're so affable and easy to work with. And so part of when I listen to this, I kind of like, I just want to trust you no matter what. I just do. You know, you just are a trustworthy type person. But what is the game plan besides the mister? If that doesn't work, then what? Do we shut down the whole kit and caboodle and just call it an academic experience or what?
Well, I suppose if we can't make the mister work, then the logical step would be expensive, but less expensive than shutting the whole thing down. And that would be to actually erect, to enclose the biosolid storage and loading area.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And we actually have a design sketched out to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You may have seen some of these UDOT large arched fabric buildings that they put sand and salt in for the winter.
Yeah.
Those are actually really durable buildings. I think they'll guarantee the fabric for like 20 years, and they typically get 20 to 30 years plus life. So a couple of concrete walls. So there's already concrete walls around two or three sides of that area. And so we've looked at dimensions on a cover like that. We literally just cover the whole thing with one of these big arched buildings. We would have to also then scrub that. We could build the same kind of odor scrubber. So the main receiving building has a 12-foot deep bed of wood chips that are kind of like compost,
right.
And the air goes in and comes up through there. It doesn't have a capacity to add anything to it. But we have room right next to this to build another one.
And wood chips would be pretty cheap since we can get them over at the landfill.
Wasatch Integrated makes us a great deal. They make us a great deal on the wood chips. But they're not free because it costs them a lot of money to handle them and grind them. They're not, the grinding is not cheap. So, that's probably a $200,000 to $300,000 project. Now, something that we would explore probably before we did that it would not be too difficult to have, say, roll-off boxes, the big roll-off trailer boxes they use for trash at construction sites and things. You take a roll-off, set a couple of roll-off boxes there that the biosolids would be discharged right into the roll-off box through a cover. So we cover them, push the sludge in until they were full. Then the cover comes up, you take the roll-off box out, roll the tarp over it, and haul it right away. We've seen similar operations at other plants. It's a little complicated mechanically, but we would pencil that option out to compare it with covering the whole area. We really like the misting or the vapor system because it covers not just that sludge area, but we can have it cover the south plant. We can have it cover the whole Wasatch Resource area, the food waste area. So from what we can see out there in the literature and from talking to people that do this kind of stuff all day, every day, this is kind of the most comprehensive way to go after it.
So are you following the recommendations from the Jacobs people? Is that one of the recommendations, is this vaporizing misting system?
Right. The two of the vendors, GOC and Ecosorb, were recommended to us by Jacobs.
Is that their first line of attack, according to Jacobs? Is that the best approach right now?
That was the last recommendation at the end of their, well, I take it back. It wasn't in the report. That was in a email that the primary author of the report, Mark Smith, sent to me. You know, we said, who do we talk to do this? Mm-hmm. And so he gave us those references.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I will look up the temperature issue and see what, because sometimes fresh eyes see stuff that you just don't see anymore.
Are there any other questions? Thanks, Dow.
I appreciate your time.
Oh, okay. Natalie?
Dow, I've only been on the council since January, but I do live in Foxborough North. In the last few months, I have seen a lot of effort from you and your colleagues to solve this problem. So I'm wondering if we did another 3-month extension on the, I just forgot the word, the thing, that if that would give you time to get everything done, and then we could see if it still was a problem with after the misters.
Yes, I would very much hope to have everything wrapped up in 90 days.
And then I'm assuming that the problem is worse when it's warmer. So in 3 months, we could have either an opportunity to say this is completely taken care of, or to say, hey, let's review this in another 3 months and make sure it's still working. But I think that's what I'd like to do. I don't want to take, I think you're doing a good job, but I don't want to make our concerns seem minimal, because it's not minimal. We're really concerned about this. So I think we that's what I would suggest. Sorry.
That seems very fair.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Dow while we have him here? Okay. Thank you, Dow.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Yeah. David, you're on the line. I guess there's a couple of things we could do. Natalie made kind of a proposition there. It really wasn't on the agenda. I'm assuming that we could go ahead and talk about that if we wanted to. If that's the type of thing, we don't need to go into a closed session. Let me ask this, is there a desire for members of the council to go into a closed session to discuss this?
Mayor, I'll, unless you want me to stay, I'll log off so that you can speak frankly.
We'd speak frankly anyway, but.
Okay.
Okay. That's fine. Thanks for your time, Dell. Doesn't sound like we'll be going into a closed session. Natalie gave a suggestion there. Does anybody feel differently than that? And I guess the question is, if that is kind of our feelings and thoughts, do we need a motion, or do we really need to take any action on this tonight?
Mayor?
Yeah.
I've been cutting in and out. Could you repeat what Natalie's suggestion was?
Natalie's suggestion was that we give them 90 days. And a 90-day extension on this to see where they are in 90 days, and then we can look at it again.
I think that sounds very reasonable.
Do we need a motion on that, or is just this brief discussion okay? Ken, tell me what you think.
Unless David has a different opinion, I don't believe I need a council motion from you. If I need to restate that position to the public, I'll just state it as the council's position, that you've given the sewer district 90 days to complete the proposed improvements.
Yeah. And Mayor, my opinion is that you do not need a motion unless you want to instruct Ken to do something affirmatively to move this forward. If we're just going another 90 days where we're not taking any other action, then no motion is needed. The only way we'd need one is if we went the other direction, then decisions would need to be made.
Okay. Well, I haven't heard any comments going in a direction other than what Natalie suggested. I'll open that for a second more to see if there's anyone that wants to pursue something. If not, I think we're to the end of the meeting. And so the next item would be a motion to adjourn. So let me know what you think. Did you have anything else, Ken, on your city manager report?
No, Mayor, I sure didn't. Thanks.
Okay.
Mayor, I wanted to ask something.
Yeah.
Raise an issue. And that is, I'm finding with COVID, both in every aspect of our society and the way we're living, that there seems to be kind of a disconnect. There isn't the synergy that we typically could get in our meetings at the city council. And I'm finding that what we're doing is we're kind of hesitant to talk, and then afterward we think, I'm the only one that talked, I need to keep my mouth shut next time. This is kind of a stalemate in my mind at communication, this process.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it's possible that we could meet again in person, distanced with masks, and have city council meetings in person.
I know, it's certainly possible. I know several cities are doing that. In fact, I think probably the majority of the cities are meeting in person now.
I think it would be more productive, and I think we would probably be more creative and collaborative when we are able to see one another.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea. And the tricky part is if people don't want to show up in person, they still need to come, and we can do that. It just gets a little bit trickier if they're on with, if we have some people on with Zoom and some people not on with Zoom, but I think we can work that out. I think you're right.
Well, Mayor, maybe we could take a straw poll and see if the city council members, how they feel about it, just besides me.
Who else would like to meet in person? And are there those that feel reluctant to do it still?
I'm good either way, Mayor.
Mayor, I think meeting in person is great. And I did a presentation earlier this week to the Ogden School Board. And they had a couple of members that, were higher risk. And so they continued to call in. And then they had a camera that was in their school board chambers. And so it was able to work. And so I think that as long as we allow citizens and also council members, if, they've been exposed or something, to continue to participate online, I think in person with masks and distancing would be fine. Lisa, and I do agree with you. We have not been as collaborative as we used to be, and I really miss that. So I think that will help us work better.
Okay. All right, well, let's go ahead and move forward with that, Ken. And then we'll have to spend some time making sure that we can handle it technology-wise, because I do know that I have been in Zoom meetings where you have some in person and some on Zoom where it just doesn't work very well.
Yeah,
but I've been in others where it does work. So let's look at that, Ken, and see what we can do.
We sure will. Thank you. And I really appreciate, Lisa, I appreciate you bringing that up. I think for the staff, there'll be some benefits to meeting again with the council as well.
Great. That's great. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, can I add a comment? I think your comment on technology is critical. As we're looking at that technology to be able to broadcast and work collaboratively with that, I wonder if we just want to make sure that technology improvement would also work for recording our meetings as a long-term venture. I know that several cities in Davis County record their city council meetings and then release them later. All of our meetings are recorded here on Zoom. And so over the last 6 months, all of our city council meetings have been recorded and could be watched by the public. And so I'm just wondering if that's something that we'd want to add in. And then making sure that those who are virtually attending would be able to speak and be collaborative. I think that's critical. So I'm all for this. I think we've definitely missed out on the strength we've had as a city council. Ken's mentioned several times that, you know, he's been proud of the city council that we work so well together, and we don't want to lose that over the last 6 months of being separated. And I do miss the work sessions where we haven't been able to hear from all the departments and feel as connected. And as we're coming up for budget season, I'm thinking ahead for March and all of our budget planning, and we've missed out on kind of 6 months of presentations, and I think we have some catch up to do.
All right, sounds good. Is there anything else? Is there a motion to adjourn then?
Motion to adjourn.
All right.
I'll second.
Thanks all, and look forward to getting together with you in a couple of weeks maybe.
Yeah, we can get together on the 20th.
Okay. All right, good night, everybody.
Thank you.
See you later.
Hey, Mayor, you still there?
I am.
This is Dee.
Yeah, Dee.
Just a comment on your virtual type stuff. I think if you had a camera that was sitting about where the podium is, and somebody ran that camera so that you could show the whole council at once and then maybe turn around to others, I think that it'll work very well, that you'll have to have somebody that sort of changes the camera around to who's speaking and make sure that it's picked up. But I think that's a great idea.
Okay, thanks, Dee. Yeah, I think we can look at it. Like I said, I've had some okay experiences and some bad experiences with this, where you have half on and half off. But yeah, we'll look at it and see what we can come up with.
I support it.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
We'll talk to you later. Mm-hmm, bye.